everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to be discussing Season 7, Episode 5, Shut Up, Dr. Phil, written by Brad Buckner and Eugenie Ross Lemming, and directed by Phil Segretia. That's right, it's the return of Buck Lemming. Fasten your seatbelts. Overall, this one isn't bad. It's got some gags that don't really work, and of course we get Spike and Cordelia, and how can you be mad about that? There's also a boatload of links to media from Charisma Carpenter and James Marsters, linked at the bottom of the SuperWiki page for those interested in some of the behind-the-scenes on this episode. There's also a boatload of references to the Supernatural crew in this one, even including the portrait of Jerry Wanick and his dog Tula that gets melted in the art gallery. It's like the entire art department just threw themselves into this one with everything they had, and I absolutely appreciate it on that level. And yeah, some of the jokes fall flat or come off as super dated now. This episode was from 2011, 12 years before I'm recording this podcast episode. But some of it still lands. And honestly, for Buck Lemming, I'll take it. And I mean, we get some interesting insight into what's actually going on inside Dean's head, which I am always here for. Sam is demanding performance from Dean, too, trying with all the sensitivity of a crowbar to Dr. Phil Dean. Like, just unburdening his woes will make them all better and allow him to lay that guilt aside the way Sam insisted he was able to do in the previous episode. And just refusing to feel his feels isn't any healthier than Dean's repress and suffer method. Sam's guilt and trauma just comes out in bursts of hallucifying instead of nightmares and guilt and self-hatred. And I think that helps him lay the blame for it all on Lucifer instead of recognizing it's his own mind doing all of this to him. But we'll get into some of their respective trauma coping mechanisms as we go through the episode. Plus, we get a nice helping of performing Dean, which, for Buck Lemming, you know, spot on. So, let's just get to the then segment. We open the then segment with the reminder that Dean hates witches because they're always spewing their bodily fluids everywhere, and going way back to season 3 when we first had an episode with witches and just some of the disgusting things that they have done. We are again reminded that Cass could not hold back the Leviathan and exploded himself in a lake over it. And then a brief reintroduction to the Leviathan, that they're like shapeshifters who are really into eating people and nothing can kill them. We are reintroduced to the one Leviathan who was tailing Sam and Dean in the previous episode and dumped cheese on a poor store clerk and then supposedly consumed him. We're reminded of Amy Pond, who knew Sam and Sam knew her, and Dean killed her anyway, even though Sam was insisting she wasn't a danger to people anymore. We see Dean's guilt over this, with an El Sol sign behind him telling a bartender that he had to do this, but he feels terrible about it and he's lying to Sam about it. No other mention is made of Amy's son, but it's all left as Dean's reaction being just pure guilt over the fact that he actually killed her. And he's beginning to doubt that that was the right thing to do, even though he's convinced himself he really didn't have a choice in the matter. He doesn't trust Sam for his hallucifying, which is not even mentioned in this then segment, and isn't really mentioned in the rest of this episode either. So it's easy for the viewing audience to kind of forget that little detail, that Sam had run away after hallucifying so bad that he completely was zoning out in conversations, that he left and basically turned off his phone, made himself unfindable, knowing that Dean wouldn't be able to follow after him, and just tried to handle the Amy situation on his own. Of course Dean didn't trust him, because Sam didn't trust Dean with the information either. But all of that brings us to now. We open with a woman in an upscale salon as a man is doing her hair and putting her underneath a hairdryer. She's a real estate agent on the phone advising her friend to sell the house because it was her ex-husband's dream house and selling it will punish him and free her from it. So her friend decided to sell her house. After a few minutes, she is starting to get overheated underneath this hairdryer, tries to lift it off her head. It burns her fingers. When she tries to slide out from under it, though, she's shoved back up by some unseen force. Nobody can hear her yelling for help over the sound of the hairdryer and the music in the salon. The machine starts sparking and she starts flailing and screaming, and when the hairdresser finally does come back to check on her, he finds her horrifically dead and screams. And then we cut to the title card. Splat. After the title card, we open with a view of a sunny curtained window, and it pans over and you see Dean sleeping in a motel bed. And we see flashes of the nightmare he's having as he jumps around in his sleep. We see flashes of Cass wading out into that lake, completely taken over by the Leviathans. We see more flashes of Sam in that warehouse shooting at nothing, almost shooting at Dean, hallucinating Lucifer. Then we see flashes of him killing Amy as she swears she won't kill again and Dean insisting that she will. And he wakes up in a cold sweat. Sam's bed is slept in, but empty. Dean reaches for a bottle of beer on his nightstand, but it's also empty. So instead he gets up and pours himself some whiskey and does some case research about that woman who we saw die in the cold open. And we all know season 7 is the one that really starts Dean's alcoholism into full swing and plays on it very heavily later in the season. But it's clear that he's already drinking to self-medicate from this scene. And even before this, in previous episodes, he's going to the bar just to have a drink or whatever. But as he's reading this article, he pours himself a second glass of whiskey, and it's like first thing in the morning here. He's just throwing himself into anything to not think about what his nightmare was about. Then Sam comes back. He'd been out jogging, which Dean is mildly offended at, teases Sam about it, and for some reason compares him to Lance Armstrong, which Sam has to repeatedly say, no, he was a bicycler. But Dean is like, while you were out running, I was actually working, found a case in Prosperity, Indiana, in addition to freaky electrocution hairdryer lady. In the past 2 weeks, there's also been another guy who was boiled alive in his hot tub. But they agree that this sounds like a case. Sam then says, by the way, what's going on with you? And Dean tries to dismiss this as we've had this conversation, and Sam taunts him, is like, no, in order to do that, you'd have to speak. And it's clear that Dean is just mildly annoyed with Sam for his whole attitude about letting go of his guilt. I just don't feel guilty anymore. I did my time in hell, and I just don't carry that burden anymore. Dean's like, yeah, but you're you, and I'm me, and I just don't let go of shit like that. But that doesn't mean that anything's going on with him. When Sam leaves the room to go shower and get ready to go, Dean picks up his whiskey glass, kind of looks at it, and then without drinking any, sets it aside. Dean realizes his guilt is really getting to him. We already saw his nightmare. Guilt over Cass, lack of trust in Sam, considering his hallucinations, and guilt over Amy. We then make one of several random cuts to that Leviathan from the end of the previous episode. He's on the phone, leaving a convenience store with a bag of groceries, telling the person on the phone that, yeah, I know this Winchester thing is taking longer than it should be, but I'm working on it kind of deal. He tosses his groceries in the trunk of his car as he hangs up and is like, yeah, I'll be there in a day and a half. And we see there's also a dead guy in the trunk of his car, so I guess a snack for later. In Prosperity, Indiana, Sam, posing as FBI, is talking with the victim's sister. Sam asks if Wendy had any enemies, and her sister's like, I was the big sister and I looked up to her. She worked with the church and she had a kids group and everybody loved her. Sam's like, well, she was in real estate and this other guy, Carl, who died in his hot tub, was an architect. Do they have any dealings in common? Like, could somebody have been targeting both of them? And she's like, I don't know if she ever worked with the guy or knew him. Meanwhile, Dean's over at the salon talking with Chris, the hairdresser. Dean's asking lots of very relevant questions about how the hair dryers work. They can't even go over a certain temperature. And Chris confirms, yes, the fuse would have blown and it would have shut off automatically if it did. There's no way it could have happened. Except that it did happen. While he's examining the floor, though, Dean finds a weird coin. Dean comments that somebody could have just dropped it back there, but of course, they don't have pockets in those little robe thingies they make the clients wear at the spa. And Sam mocks him for knowing that. And Dean's just like, I observe with my eyes, which is true. Dean had never been to that spa as a client. Different spas have different policies about what you wear when you're having treatments or whatever. Maybe some other spas use robes with pockets, but this one specifically does not. And that's relevant to their case. It rules out the coin having come from some random client who dropped it. It's like Sam is trying to needle Dean into opening up to him. I didn't realize you were such a spa expert. They have no idea where this coin could have come from, but they suspect it could be a hex talisman of some sort. And Dean walks into a liquor store after he hangs up with Sam, like he was out of whiskey back at the hotel room. He can't get through his day without alcohol now. Meanwhile, somewhere else in town, at a construction site, crew is getting ready to go home for the day, and one guy stops off at the porta potty before leaving. Out in his truck, he has an air compressor that's not even plugged in. We see the plug just hanging there, and it turns itself on. The nail gun attached to it just floats up of its own volition and aims itself at the porta potty. He finishes, turns around as the door opens, and he's like, oh, come on, like about to harass somebody for walking in on him. But then he sees the floating nail gun and it just literally nails him to the back of the porta potty. And he's still alive as it moves in for the coup de grace, one shot to each eye. And you only see that from the back of the porta potty, not from his face. Thank God. As soon as he's dead, the nail gun drops to the ground, the compressor turns itself off, and that's it. So now we have a real estate agent, an architect, and a contractor who've all been killed in bizarre and horrifying ways. There's got to be some sort of connection between these three. Dean's on site to interview the police officer about what had happened here. The police officer knows an awful lot about the guy and uses the excuse, like, we're a close-knit community. And he knows not only the guy's religious preferences, but also that he's an asthmatic and things like that. Dean asked if there was anything unusual besides the nails in his eyes, and the cop says they can't figure out where he plugged in the compressor because there wasn't a generator on his truck. There was no electrical source out there. And as we saw when it happened, it didn't need power. It was magic. But as Dean's looking around the interior of the porta potty, in the corner he spots another one of those weird little coins. Dean goes into the construction office trailer where Sam is looking online for connections between these three people and found one. All three of them are connected to a shopping center project that they were developing. Apparently, there was some conflict between them all over this project, and then the project was just stopped. So Dean's like, so everybody working on the project is dead now? And Sam's like, almost. They were working with a developer named Don Stark. Dean's like, why does that name sound familiar? We saw it in the scene where they drove into town. The bust of Don Stark. who I will continually think of as Spike, regardless that his name's Don Stark in this episode. But it's in a square in front of a building with big signs for an art auction. Dane's concerned that Don Stark might be their next victim, so maybe they should try to protect him. And then he grabs a flask out of his jacket, and Sam's like, really? From a flask in the middle of the day? Sam's kind of offended that Dean's drinking on the job, and Dean's like, we're always on the job. Yeah, he's not, like, drinking to get drunk. He's just low-key keeping himself just slightly buzzed so he can shove his guilt and his nightmares down enough to do the job. And that's alcoholism. Sam gets a notification from Bobby identifying the coin as an antique Romanian ducat, and then notices the flowers around the base of this Don Stark statue there are all dead. Dean points out another spot in town where the plants had all been dead around the bus bench that had Wendy's picture on it, an ad for her real estate business. And then we get another pointless cut to the Leviathan dude just driving and listening to See the Funny Little Clown by Bobby Goldsboro, which is just like, okay, badass Leviathan dude, this is the music you have chosen? Like, no one knows he's crying on the inside because he's laughing on the outside. Like, okay. I don't really know what the point of that scene is, but it exists, so I had to mention it. We return to Prosperity, where we find Sam and Dean at Don Stark's very fancy house. He's the only last living connection to everybody involved in that shopping center project, and they don't know that he might not be in danger, too. He figures it out real quick. If the Bureau's involved, I'm assuming you think all three of those people were murdered. Dean's like, it's starting to look that way, yes. Sam asks if he had a relationship with the three victims. He claims to have known them in business circles. Dean brings up the shopping center project and asks why that fell through, and Don Stark is unconcerned. He's like, these things happen in business. They're interrupted by Jenny Klein, his assistant, and a writer on the show. She just wants Don to know that she's running to the cleaners and then to another office to pick up some revised contracts, and she'll be back soon. And she also baked him some cupcakes, and she's just very pretty and a delightful person, very bubbly and sweet. When he looks back at Sam and Dean, they're both looking at him sort of judgmentally, like, oh, so you're screwing your secretary, huh? But nobody says anything out loud. Sam makes an excuse that he needs to use the bathroom. That gives Sam a chance to scope out the house, while Dean continues to talk to Don. Dean asks him if he has any rivals, and he's like, sure, tons. Real estate's brutal, but I've demonstrated my love for this town, and I think I'm respected for what I do here. We saw he's got a statue of himself in the town square, and an art auction sponsored by Margaret Stark in the background. So he is well-liked, just like the other people who were involved in this project. Sam finds his way to the master bedroom, where in the big walk-in closet, one side of the closet is completely full of Don's suits and things, and the other side is completely empty, except for a shoe with a broken heel on a shelf. Like somebody who shared the other side of the closet cleared out her stuff, left a pair of shoes with one badly broken heel, and some weird witchy-looking symbol on a pendant. On a high shelf, Sam finds an envelope and a shoebox, and it contains weird sigils and diagrams and demonic-looking things. Back in his office, Don is proudly showing off his wall of accomplishments and awards he's won, and Sam walks back in just as Don is telling Dean that, yes, there's fierce competition, but he's well-liked and admired. And Sam's like, including your wife? And he apologizes and is like, yeah, we're sorry, we heard you were splitting up. Don doesn't seem too shaken by it. He's like, yeah, sometimes you just realize you've grown apart. It's a separation. It's temporary. And Sam asks about the issues between them. How would he describe them? He just describes it as a marital misunderstanding. When Don tries to BS his way out of talking about it, for obvious reasons, that's his deeply personal life, Dean sees a picture of her on the mantle and looks back at Don and is like, oh, she caught you cheating on her, huh? Dean points out things are sort of cordial between you and your assistant, and Don just, he claims he just admires confident, competent women. They're like, really? He finally comes clean and admits, yes, he did have a recent thing with a business associate, but he dismisses it as being of any import. Dean points out that wives usually think of an affair as more than a thing. And Don admits, yes, Maggie found out about it and felt that she needed some time off, and again insists that it's temporary. Dean correctly surmises, though, that the little thing he had with a business associate was with Wendy Goodson, the dead real estate agent. And Don dismisses it as her death had nothing to do with the affair. That was over long before her accident. Dean says if it was an accident. Don is like, wait, you're not implying that Maggie had something to do with it. Sam's like, we're not implying anything. Just take your wife to dinner and apologize. And then excuses himself, and Dean follows after him but stops to tell Don to grovel to his wife. As they leave the house, Sam tells Dean about what he found upstairs, the hex junk, the empty closet that makes it seem like she's really not planning on coming back anytime soon, and spots a planter full of dead plants, just like the ones around Don Stark's statue, just like the ones around the bus stop. I need to stop for a second and point out that one of the things that Sam and Dean had thrown out when Don Stark had insisted he'd had a little thing with somebody, Sam's like, yeah, like a shoe or a golf club. And Dean suggested, or a waffle iron. And waffles and waffle irons will play a role in this show as a sort of deception signifier, sort of like El Sol Light. Whenever waffles appear on this show, there's some sort of trickery happening, some sort of false presentation of reality, like Don trying to downplay everything that's going on with his wife and pretending to not have any clue about what had happened to these people and their bizarre deaths, and the infidelity of it. Which makes it even funnier in a couple of episodes when Sam is love potioned into marrying Becky and Dean gets them a waffle iron as a wedding present, trying to extend an olive branch to them. I just think Dean's association with waffle irons right here makes that kind of interesting and funny. And secondly, I'm going to pause because the reference that Dean uses to talk to Sam here is part of a performing Dean's setup, where he professes knowledge of something, downplays how he understands it, or gives some sort of false excuse for understanding it, but then proves later on in the episode that no, he's really into this thing and really understands it, and not just as someone who watched it to ogle a beautiful woman. He makes a reference to Bewitched here, and when Sam's like, Bewitched? Really, Dean? Dean plays it off as, oh yeah, I only know what that is because Nicole Kidman played the witch in that movie and she's hot because she's a redhead or whatever. That is something Sam could accept about Dean, even if later on in this episode, Dean will prove that that is not the reason he knew this reference. Okay, just setting that up for when it comes back around later. But they're going under the assumption right now that Don Stark really has no idea his wife is a witch. Sam comments, based on the number of dead plants on this porch, that if this witch is strong enough, just her being pissed off could be enough to send some bad vibes these people's way. Maybe it's not even something she's doing intentionally to kill the plants, it's just her anger doing it. While they're walking back to the car, Dean puts in a call to Bobby to ask him about it. He's like, Bobby, hey, it's Dean. And then he stops and has to clarify, Winchester. I guess Bobby said, Dean who? Yeah, very funny, Bobby. And since this is in the days before they discovered witch-killing bullets, Dean is trying to ask how to kill a witch. Because they know it's not just a simple matter of shooting them or stabbing them. There's magic involved in ending witches. And even Bobby doesn't seem to have a spell at the ready. He's got to go look something up to help them. Later that day, they find out where Maggie's been staying to break into her house to scope around to see if there's any evidence of her having made these coins. Dean breaks into the house while Sam lifts the hood of the Impala and stands outside on his phone, ready to alert Dean if somebody comes home, pretending that the car is broken down. There's a bunch of moving boxes downstairs. There's not really any furniture set up or anything. The house is mostly empty. Upstairs, Dean finds her bedroom. And in her closet, there's a weird little witchy shrine with photographs of the dead people with blood sigils painted on their faces. And one more picture that hasn't been touched yet of Jenny Klein, Don's secretary. It's an enlargement of the photo on an identification card that Maggie has stolen, but it does give Jenny's home address. Dean's like, "Don, keep it in your pants, I swear." But while Dean is up in her bedroom, Maggie comes home and Sam's standing out by the street, pretending to be on hold with a mechanic or something. She pulls in her driveway and Sam, in sort of a panic, tries to call Dean to warn him. But he gets an "all circuits are busy" message. His call can't go through. He has no way to warn Dean. So he runs up the driveway, trying to waylay Maggie. He drops the whole pretense of being there because his car broke down, shows his FBI badge because he knows he's going to have to deal with her again, and asks for a moment so he can ask her some questions. She asks if he could come back in maybe half an hour because it's a really bad time right now. Sam says it's really important that he talks to her, and she's like, "Yes, I understand that. I'm happy to talk to you, but I'm in the middle of an emergency. Can you please just come back in half an hour?" And just dismisses him and walks toward her house. Without anything else to do to get Dean's attention, Sam just walks over to her car and pushes down on it hard enough to trigger the car alarm. And Maggie turns back and looks at Sam like, "What the hell did you do?" And Sam apologizes, but Dean got the message and was alerted. In his haste to get out of there, he didn't quite get the closet door shut all the way. Dean eventually manages to get outside and meet up with Sam. Dean tells him that Jenny Klein is up next. She's the one we need to protect. Maggie's gonna notice that picture is gone sooner or later because Dean stole it, but that's gonna slow her down a little bit. So they race over to Jenny's. Soon as she gets upstairs, Maggie notices the cupboard door isn't closed and notices immediately the big picture of Jenny Klein is gone. Over at Jenny Klein's, she's wearing an apron that says "I Heart Chocolate," baking up another round of cupcakes with cute pink frosting on them. Maggie is super pissed, however. She finds a picture of Jenny amongst her things, just a regular photograph. Pricks her finger and paints a blood sigil on Jenny's face. She starts chanting a spell as Jenny unwraps one of her cupcakes, smiling delightedly as she bites into it. But there's something that looks like blood dripping from her mouth and all over her hands and the counter as she tries to figure out what the hell is going on here. What is this? She looks down at the cupcake in her hand and there's a tiny beating heart inside of it. She starts coughing up blood into the sink, at which point someone knocks on her door. We know it's Sam and Dean. They bust down the door, frantically searching around the place for the offending coin they know must be there. Sam eventually finds it, but without any other way to deactivate the magic or cut the link, Sam just pulls out his gun, sets the coin on the counter, and shoots the coin. But it saves Jenny's life. She gets cleaned up and is lying on the sofa, kind of in shock at this. She can't get over the fact that there were tiny beating hearts inside of her cupcakes. After she hyperventilates a little bit, she is like, What just happened?" Sam tells her that she was hexed. And she's like, "Oh my God, who are you people? What do I do? She can't process any of this. None of this makes sense to her. Dean advises her to pack a bag, get in your car, and go. At least 500 or 600 miles away ought to do it, because that would be beyond the limits of where this witch can reach you. Sam throws in the advice that you should cool things with Dawn Stark, and she's like, what are you talking about? There's nothing between me and Dawn Stark. He's married, for God's sakes. Ew. Like, she's disgusted by the idea of having sex with her boss. Good for her. The next shot we cut to, though, is one of my favorite things in the entire series of Supernatural. The beautiful painting of Jerry Wanick and his dog, Tula, because we love Tula. And I mean, we love Jerry, too, but, you know, Tula. We pan over to reveal that we are at Maggie's art auction. And that was her crisis that she was in the middle of and had to delay talking to Sam. Something to do with her auction. She's got this whole place decked out for a ball. Her assistant Sue comes over to have her sign for some flowers that were delivered. And it's clear that Sue is very close to Maggie, her best friend. And she's like, oh, what would I ever do without you, Sue? And with all this mess with Dawn and everything else. And it's like, well, Maggie, if you stopped killing people, maybe maybe things would be easier. I don't know. Just a suggestion. Apparently, though, Sue was the one to tell Maggie about Dawn and Wendy's affair. Now she feels bad about having told Maggie about it because it's broken her heart. Maggie's like, oh, no, no, I love you for what you did. And Sue tells her, I love you, too. And it was like a confession from Sue. It's very one-sided here. Poor Sue. Because Maggie just rushes off to the next micromanagement session with somebody else across the room. Sue goes back to work dealing with all the flowers that have arrived when Dawn comes in. And it's very clear that Sue is coldly hostile to Dawn. Go figure. She loves his wife. Dawn hurt her. They're both arguing. Dawn's like, yeah, you whispered lies into Maggie's ear. And she's like, but they weren't lies, were they? Dawn's like, I make one mistake and blah, blah, blah. And Sue's like, I sincerely doubt that. She's openly hostile to Dawn. Meanwhile, when Maggie sees Dawn, she's not hostile towards him. She's just like, what do you want, Dawn? Dawn asks for a moment of her time. Sue walks away. And Dawn tells Maggie, I think I've been very patient. That little thing with Wendy, that was very creative. Like, meaning he knows she killed Wendy in that creative way with the hairdryer. He's trying to tell her enough is enough. And she's like, no, it's not enough. Dawn's like, none of this was my fault. Maggie just looks at him like, oh, really? Dawn's like, well, if you'd been around a little more, because between the art and the charity, I hardly ever saw you. One of the things he lays blame on is her relationship with Sue. Maggie's like, oh, boo-hoo, mister, I've got to put my name on everything in town. As she tries to excuse herself to get back to running her charity event, after blaming this whole thing on the third member of their marriage, Dawn's ego, Dawn offers her a little bit of advice. That there are some FBI agents in town investigating those murders. Maggie turns around and completely deadpan says, they're hunters, sweetheart. They're not FBI. So she's already got them pegged as hunters. She's like, oh, I can see you're terribly concerned for my safety, but I'll take care of it. Dawn's like, don't kill them. Just stop. But it's pretty clear she's not gonna stop. As Dawn leaves the building, he notices the dead plants around the base of his statue and just sort of shakes his head at it. And as he walks away, from a different angle, we see the Impala pull up. He hears a weird noise, turns around, the bust is shaking, and it just sort of shatters apart. Not only did Dawn see this, but Sam and Dean did as well. Dawn looks up into an upstairs window and sees Maggie just sort of smirking down at him. Like, if she was really trying to stay off the radar of hunters, she wouldn't have pulled stunts like that. In the Impala, Dean comments that now she's just getting nasty. Killing his girlfriend is one thing, but his commemorative bust? that's gotta hurt. While they're sitting there, though, Bobby calls. He's got a recipe for a spell for them. Dane insists he can just remember it and he's not gonna write down the ingredients. And Bobby starts talking and Dean's like, hang on, hang on. And he gives Sam the sign for, please get me a pen. And Sam goes digging through the glove box looking for a pen while Dean's listening to the instructions. Later that night, back inside the art auction, Maggie's standing at the podium, all dressed up fancy, rehearsing her speech. She cuts herself off midway through the sentence to yell out more instructions for the people setting the place up. Not there! And then Sue interrupts her, equally dressed up fancy, with a little applause. Sue puts a hand on Maggie's shoulder, and Maggie looks down at it like, okay. And while Sue's trying to have a tender moment with her, Maggie's like, you just reminded me, I have to check on the finger sandwiches, and just gets away from Sue. Back in their motel room, Dean has a huge, beautiful pie, and he's just about to take his first bite of it, savoring this as he slowly raises it towards his mouth, when Sam comes in and drops a giant plastic bag filled with rotten chicken feet right in front of him. Dean makes a gagging noise, drops his fork, and is like, what the hell is that? Dean's like, well, why can I smell them? Sam's like, well, the power's been wonky, and they weren't quite refrigerated. Apparently, every shop on that block had issues. Burst pipe, power outages. They've all lost so much product that they won't make rent. They assume it's just some further effect of Maggie's power going haywire and causing problems, just like the dead flowers, just affecting the town negatively in general, instead of something targeted and specific to prevent Sam and Dean from being able to execute this spell, since they know they're hunters. Maggie comes back to Sue with two martinis, hands one to Sue and says, to us, I couldn't have done it without you. Pulls the pick out of her drink that has the olives on it, except one of the olives is an eyeball, and she screams. Don Stark's sitting outside in his car, just listening for it, and he just smiles when she comes across it. Maggie immediately, of course, knows it's Don trying to sabotage her, and she looks around at all the art and is like, no, because all the paintings are melting, including poor Jerry and Tula. Meanwhile, Sue's like, what's going on? Maggie's like, he did this. Don did this. And Sue's like, Don? How? How did he do this? Melting paintings. Maggie's convinced that Don wants to hurt her, and that's correct. Sue tells Maggie it'll be okay. Don's a dick, but you have people that love you, and he can't take that away from you. And as soon as she says that, a drink tray rises up off the bar by itself, flies across the room, and beheads Sue. Guess Don could take that away from Maggie. And as soon as that's done, Don just grins and drives away. So it's clear that it's not just Maggie who is a witch. And Maggie's declared war on him over this. Sam and Dean show up at the art auction armed with their witch spell. But of course we know they're too late. Place is crawling with cops. They flash their badges at the door guard and find the destruction and death and dismemberment, and rightly surmise that Maggie would not have done this to her own auction. They very quickly figure out that it was Don Stark, and realize they'd missed the point the whole time they'd been talking to him earlier, that he is also a witch. And here Sam makes the joke, yeah, it's like Bewitched just got a lot less funny, and Dean, who'd made the excuse that he only liked the modern movie with Nicole Kidman in it, says, yeah, it's like when they switched the Darrens, which was in the original series. Coincidentally, both actors who played the Darrens were named Dick. Dick Sargent and Dick York. I don't know why I know that, but I used to watch that show when I was a kid, okay? I wanted to be able to just wiggle my nose and make shit happen. I mean, who doesn't when you're like six? But as Sam and Dean get in the Impala and drive off, we see that the Leviathan dude has finally shown up in town. He is now hot on their tails. So while they're all concerned about these witches, they have no idea to even beware that Leviathans are directly hunting them now, because they didn't have enough problems already. But Dean's comments about Bewitched is a beautiful example of what we're talking about when we say performing Dean. It's not that he puts on this false front that's completely fake and unreal and is not speaking truthfully about himself. It's that he will say something like the comment about Bewitched, and when called out on it, he will make the most heteronormative, most dismissive sort of comment, trying to justify his knowledge of the thing or his admiration of the thing or just his enjoyment of the thing, in this case, Bewitched. And yet later on, we'll say something completely offhanded, like this comment about switching the Darrens, that proves that he didn't just watch the movie because Nicole Kidman's hot. You know, he knew the storyline of the original show enough to know that they swapped actors midway through the series and tried to pretend that it wasn't anything to notice, you know? Proving his knowledge, understanding, and appreciation of the thing was not just Nicole Kidman's hot, but I actually like and appreciate this thing and enjoy it and know about it. And it's not something he's ashamed of. He just says the statement and moves on. And he does that a lot with random innocuous things. And we'll see that again later this season when Dean has his confrontation with the ballet slippers. It's basically pulling performing Dean out from behind his mask forcibly. But we'll talk about that one when we get there. That's not for quite a while yet. But there's a lot of that in this season. It's like they're really learning how to play with that particular way of conveying this concept about Dean and his likes and the front that he tries to put on, pretending for Sam. And he's even doing that to the extent of Sam trying to ask him about his emotions, his guilt that Sam has just had exposed for him in the previous episode, literally being tried for his guilty heart by a god. And Sam trying to help him get to the bottom of that, or at least open up about it a little, like, why won't you talk to me, man? It's like Sam's going about it in a really kind of bad way. But Dean had been putting on this performance of, oh yeah, it's nothing, blah, 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 making excuses for it. But he's finally gotten to the point where he's like, man, I am just not going to talk about it with you. He's frustrated with Sam about it. And we'll get to that later on in this episode, but just reframing that opening scene about their talk in this discussion of performing Dean, because that's another part of his performance that he puts on for Sam all the time. Sam and Dean drive over and stake out Dawn Stark's house. Sam's like, well, where's Maggie? Why isn't she here yet? And Dean's like, oh, she'll be here. They've got nothing left to throw thunderbolts at except each other. Just as Sam's explaining that, yeah, because we need them both in the same place to take them down, using that witch killing spell, Maggie comes racing up to the house. She storms inside and finds Dawn just relaxing in a chair with like a glass of sherry and some light piano music playing. He offers her a drink, like he's completely untroubled, even though she is clearly furious with him. But before they can get into a knockdown dragout, Sam and Dean burst into the room with their bowl of spell ingredients, and Dean starts chanting the spell, and Sam throws a match in, trying to light it, and it just goes up in a rotten puff of smoke. Nothing happens. And Maggie looks at them like, let me guess, chicken feet not chilled? Mm-hmm. She knew. And now they know they're screwed, standing in a room with two witches they'd been trying to kill. But suddenly, Dawn and Maggie are on the same side. Dawn stands up like, for obvious reasons, you won't be leaving this room alive. And in complete unison, Maggie and Dawn start chanting a spell of their own. Sam whispers to Dean, okay, plan B. Talking. And Dean's like, what? Like, they have no idea what to say. They don't say something, they're going to die, like, right now. They know both of these witches are more than capable of killing them. And that's what Sam had been trying to get Dean to do since the beginning of the episode. Talk. Sam describes it as some sort of domestic dispute, and if we can get them to talk about their issues with each other, maybe they'll spare us or we'll be able to get away. Or Dean says, not my area, and then looks over and sees them both about to finish their spell and cast it and kill them, when he was like, okay, and just rushes to put down the spell bowl and, like, BS his way into saving his ass. Dean points out that the two of them are capable of wiping each other out. They've kind of already proved that, except they haven't. They haven't even tried to directly hurt one another with magic, which means you still value your relationship. And Dean just starts detouring off the sanity track into trying to define their relationship. Maybe it's messed up punishment, kinky, erotic. And Sam cuts him off and it's like, no. What Dean's trying to say is whatever you two have, you're bonded. And Maggie's like, are you out of your mind? He cheated on me and humiliated me. And Sam starts floundering like, well, we're not trying to say what Don did is right. But when relationships crack, usually both parties have some responsibility for it. And Maggie's pissed at this. Like, how dare you insinuate that it's my fault that he cheated on me? And she throws a spell at Sam that knocks him to the ground. And Dean's like, okay, nobody can defend Don. And then Don's like, wait, you're not defending me? Because Dean was apparently sucking up to Maggie, saying that, oh, you must feel betrayed, and flings Dean backwards through a glass door. While Sam and Dean are recovering from being flung around, Maggie's like, I was betrayed. Your other friends introduced you and then covered for you. Lied to me about it. Sam struggles to his feet and tells Maggie, I don't think Don was lying when he says he regrets the whole Wendy thing. Maggie looks at him like, thing. They had an affair and you're calling it a thing. She tells Sam again to sit down and then just flings him to the ground. And as Sam is like in pain, flailing on the floor, he's like, affair, that's right. That's terrible. And Maggie and Don go right back to their argument. He insists that Wendy was nothing to him. It was over as soon as it started. And Maggie's like, well, it's part of a pattern. She's had 800 years of this. Dawn brings up a fling she had with Christopher Columbus. She took pity on him because he was about to set sail. What if he fell off the edge of the earth? And Dawn yells back that nothing happened with the Medici chick. Dawn accuses Maggie of having always been insanely jealous. Apparently Dawn hasn't really cheated on her all that much. She just believed he had. She's like, Jenny, Wendy. And Don's like, Jenny? She's just my secretary. I never cheated on you with her. And Dean finally struggles back into the room and confirms it's true that Jenny herself told them. Maggie just throws another finger in Dean's direction and Dean goes falling back to the floor again. But she confronts Don. She's like, is that true? He swears it is. And he's like, I made a mistake and he's sorry. And he looks genuinely sorry, and she looks genuinely like she's considering believing him. Sam struggles to his feet in the background, and instead of shutting up like a normal person would have as they're staring into each other's eyes and thinking about what they're going to say next, Sam just interrupts him and is like, see, guys, you're talking. For so many years, you buried your anger and your disappointment. Until it tore you apart when all you needed to do was talk. Like Sam has just proved this point to himself. Like Dean would feel fine if he could only just talk. And Sam just basically stepped in it here because they were closer to reconciliation in that moment than maybe they had been in centuries. And Sam just had to go and interrupt them like, yeah, see, we brought you that. Hey. Which is just about as effective as him continuing to pester Dean for his emotional labor and talking to him. Dean stumbles to his feet and he's like, yeah, and I would have missed it with the nuking my melon just took because apparently he was almost passed out on the floor. But Dean's the one who takes the punishment for Sam's ridiculous behavior. Maggie flings him back against the wall, and Dawn sends a swarm of bees to attack Dean. Maggie's impressed with Dawn's touch there. She likes the bees. Dean chokes on one and spits it out, and Maggie laughs at that. And then Dawn says, he's right. I couldn't kill you. She's apparently the only one he wants. Maggie could never murder him either. And suddenly their passion is rekindled and they embrace and kiss, and Sam's just over there smiling at the good work they did, and Dean's still pinned to the wall with bees swarming around his head, and Dean's like, does somebody want to call these things off? Sam and Dean finally return to their motel room, sort of beaten down a bit, and it's this ghastly shade of green painted on the walls. Like, major poison warning sign as Dean pulls out his flask with a sigh and takes a big drink. The little divider screen in this room is also basketballs and car wheels with tires. Like, these are the sports that Indianapolis is known for. Indiana is known for basketball and car racing. But in the context of this, you've got Sam and Dean's little games they're playing with each other. As Dean finishes his swig, he sees the look on Sam's face and it's like, oh, give me a break. Like, I know you're judging me. And Sam doesn't even look at him. It's like, I didn't even say anything. And Dean's like, yeah, I've had a long day. And the Leviathan dude from behind them says, it's not over yet. Dean pulls out a gun, cocks it, and points it at him. He looks at it like, yeah, that's not going to hurt. And he's like, hi, Sam. Hi, Dean. And now the wall behind Sam and Dean is just orangey-shaded paneling, orange bedspreads, and that ridiculous cheese ball lamp that shows up in scenes with the same thematic elements as this one. We've already seen it in the motel room they were staying when Dean got yellow fever and was confronted by Lilith in his hallucination. Yeah, there's fishy shit going on when this lamp shows up. Soulless Sam, when they dealt with Lucky the Dog Man, that lamp was in that motel room too. And now here it is, when a Leviathan finally confronts them face to face. And if he hadn't announced himself, Sam and Dean never would have even known they'd been found. He could have just killed them both. But no, he had to do the whole dramatic villain speech. The Leviathan dude tells them, I know you, you're the dead guys, or you will be in a minute. And he starts strolling toward them. Dean just shoots him in the heart, and black goo pours out. He tells them they're a bit outmatched, throws Dean across the room, starts choking Sam, and then something electrical hits his back. And he freezes and releases Sam and drops to the floor. And Dawn Stark is standing in the door. He is definitely a very powerful witch. He can cast spells strong enough to at least temporarily knock out a Leviathan. They're surprised to see him. They're like, Dawn, thank you, we owe you. And Dawn's like, good God, what is that thing? And Sam's like, yeah, I guess we should be figuring that out. And Dean adds, yeah, it's been on our to-do list. Dawn advises them to throw the thing, the Leviathan, into a bottomless pit because that spell will wear off in a few days. And he just walks right over to their room and starts fishing around under one of their beds. They're like, what are you even doing here? And he comes up with another one of his wife's coins. And he's like, I didn't think it was right that I let her kill you after all that. You got us back together. Dean's like, why would she try and kill us? We just saved your marriage. And Dawn's like, yeah, but you did try to kill her too. So you know how she can get. Ha ha. But that's why I love her. And he waits for a second with a smile on his face, like expecting Sam and Dean to go, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, we understand. But they're both staring at him like, what the fuck? and he realizes he's not going to get camaraderie out of them. So he just points at the Leviathan on the floor, says, right, bottomless pit. Ciao. And leaves. Later that night, Sam and Dean have the Leviathan chained up in the back seat. He's still out. Dean's on the phone with Bobby as he throws his duffel bag in the trunk. It's like, why didn't you throw the Leviathan in the trunk? Why are you just driving around with a chained up unconscious dude in your back seat? When he hangs up with Bobby, Dean tells Sam, we should hit the road. Are you ready? And Sam pauses again, like he's got a chance to double down on his lecture to Dean from the beginning of this episode. Were you listening to the Starks tonight? And Sam feels very confident and justified in this line of reasoning. Sam's like, yeah, you notice how they opened up and got everything off their chests? And Dean's like, yeah, kudos on selling them that crap. Sam's like, it wasn't crap, Dean. It worked. They got back together. Like, all their problems are solved magically now because they talked and unburdened themselves. And Dean is just like, no, shut up, Sam. It's not going to fix me to talk about my problems. He's just like, one of my favorite gifts. I'm just so very, 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 very tired. And Sam is like, well, like it or not, the stuff you don't talk about doesn't just go away. Like, it just builds up. Like, whatever's eating at you now. And Dean retorts angrily, there's always something eating at me. Playing off the guilt trip in the last episode. Dean just says, it's who I am. Everything's my fault. This is why I think of Led Zeppelin's Nobody's Fault But Mine as Dean's theme song, even if it's not his two favorite Led Zeppelin songs. I think that's probably a little too close to home for him to put that at the top of his list. Dean's like, if no matter what happens, I feel like I'm responsible for that. The Lindbergh baby, unemployment. And Sam's like, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about whatever you're not talking about. Sam has no idea what it even is. And he's just pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. Like, Dean, you can unload. That's kind of what I'm here for. And it's like, no, Sam, it's really not what you're there for. Sam gets really frustrated with him, and he's like, but we're good, right? Dean's like, yeah, we're good. Whatever Dean's bearing a grudge about, it's not about you directly, Sam. He's worried about you and your hallucinations and your being in touch with reality. And Sam didn't have a single even flake of a break. Like, we didn't even see him just sort of zoning out in a scene this entire episode. Is he still hallucinating? We have to expect he is, because the entire motel behind Sam in this scene is just lit up red. The sign in the background looks like a red crown. It looks like the fires of hell breaking out in this motel behind Sam. That's what Dean is seeing when he looks at Sam. He's like, this dude's hallucinating. He's in the cage with Lucifer all the time. In Dean's mind, he has to believe that for his own safety. They get in the car and drive off, and it's very clear that Sam does not believe Dean. He's just frustrated, thinks Dean needs to just unburden himself a little. It's all so utterly misguided, and he really does not want to know what Dean is burdened with. But that is how this episode ends. And this is a big deal for Sam. He always wants Dean to trust him and to unburden to him. I don't know where he gets off feeling like he has the right to demand that of Dean, considering how hard Dean has had to work to pull truth out of Sam, even earlier this season when Sam was lying to his face about being okay and in touch with reality and not having hallucinations and not seeing Lucifer everywhere and knowing reality from his hallucinations. And I mean, even last season when he was soulless, Sam lied to him for half the season. Almost got him killed a couple times, like deliberately, and lied to him all during season 4 about what he was doing with Ruby. It's like, why do you suddenly demand that Dean unburden to you, Sam? You don't think Dean trusts you? Why should he? You have lied to him even this season. So I don't know what right Sam thinks he has to this information and why he would like it if he did get it. Or that it's some big personal thing. Like, I get Sam understands that Dean is probably suffering right now. He lost Cass. And if Sam can't really remember that, then yikes. But Dean is not just bouncing back from that, and I think it's starting to freak Sam out. And things are only going to get worse. Dean's already drinking and being judged for his drinking and having nightmares that we have seen and Sam hasn't, obviously. But Dean has always been the big brother or the parental figure here. He's never really unburdened himself to Sam unless he was at a desperate breaking point moment. And his guilt currently, some of it is directly about Sam and will piss Sam off. And Dean knows that. And he's not going to burden Sam with that information. He's going to let Sam have that happy place. And that's, I think, why Dean is frustrated with Sam about being in a happier, better place, because Sam is completely innocent of the knowledge that Dean went behind his back to kill Amy, because Dean flat out did not believe or trust Sam's judgment of the entire situation. And you really can't blame Dean for not trusting him at his word. And I truly still do think if Amy had just changed her license plates, made it harder to track her, that Dean wouldn't have just let her go and moved on to something else. And he only killed her because he felt like he had to. It was his responsibility. It might be his last chance to catch her. So it's just a terrible, bad all-around situation. But he still believes he did the right thing that Sam couldn't do. And it's killing him because he knows it was also not the right thing. And he feels guilty about it, because maybe if he didn't distrust Sam so much, he would have chosen to let her go himself. But he couldn't make that choice because he couldn't have it coming back on Sam. And it's just a horrible knot, but it's what a parent would do for their child to try and clean up their mess like this. Yeah, Sam, Dean is not going to unburden to you his child figure, because he's supposed to be the one who's in control, and he's really not. But he has to be for you, because he knows you're also not in control, whatever happy facade you've managed to project. So that's the mess of season 7, and I honestly, I mean, great that they're hashing through all this crap, but man, it's just frustrating that they have to do it so much. Anyway, we will continue plowing through season 7 because we have no other choice. At least we have next week to look forward to, season 7, episode 6, Slash Fiction, and our introduction to Robbie Thompson as a writer on Supernatural. Yay! He's like the bright spot of season 7, you know? Wow, we got Robbie Thompson in season 7. Yay. Anyway, we have to wait for next week on that one. And until then, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPN George. You can find me on Discord and Blue Sky as MittensMorgul. Or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. I don't even know if I'm coherent in my rage about Sam and Dean's emotional issues this season and just Sam's hounding Dean for him to open up emotionally to him and unburden himself to him. Like, he's desperate for Dean to just unburden himself. And it's like, how dare you? How dare you? I find it offensive that Sam is demanding this of Dean. And it's just exhausting Dean even more. He's like, man, I just want to be left alone about it. You're just making it worse. Like, please stop. He's not going to unburden this. And it comes out in the worst possible way in next week's episode. So again, we have that to look forward to. But it's done with Robbie Thompson's hand. So it's a little bit more bearable. And it makes Sam look ridiculously petulant. But, you know, it sort of proves Dean's point and helps Dean unburden himself of the guilt that he's feeling, because he realizes it's pretty misplaced guilt. I really don't need to feel guilty about this. So, hey, at least we have that. Even if Sam himself will continue to hold it over Dean for a long time to come, which is just you know, petty and petulant, but, you know, Sam can be that. Sam is a lot of things, but the more emotionally mature one, he is not. I know that's the fanon lens on Sam, but oh my god. Just rewatch, like, the first 8 seasons of the show and tell me where Sam is more emotionally mature. Nowhere. Anyway. We survived our return to Bucklemming. So, everybody pat yourselves on the back. Have a good one, everyone.